Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Do you condemn Donald Trump making $5 billion off of Trump coin?
No, I would do it. I would do it. I would launch a crypto coin if I'm president.
An illegal immigrant can get a state ID and they can use that to vote in 45 states.
You're talking about entirely separate things. Does it not bother you that Trump is stuck doing this juvenile, symbolic bullshit while inflation is higher, the Iran war rages on, the tariffs are failing, and he's stuck doing Lake of America and the Gulf of America? Can you understand where I'm coming from? You guys know how much I love debates. So today we are back debating Gen Z MAGA commentator Carson Carpenter, who owns a production company for right-wing content. Carson, thank you for joining me.
Great to be here, Adam. My claim is Donald Trump's failures in this administration are due to checks and balances of this government.
Okay, that is a really, really bold claim because you're admitting that there are some failures, but you're blaming it on the constraints of the government. I think when you look at all of Trump's biggest failures, like the Iran war, that's due to a lack of checks and balances because Congress could have invoked the War Powers Resolution, they didn't, and it got us into this war. When I look at the tariffs, for example, that were struck down, it feels like the tariffs were disastrous, and then Congress was usurped so we could do those tariffs, and then they were found out to be illegal and unconstitutional. So what would you point to as failures that would have been better without checks and balances?
Well, that's my argument, Adam, is that the failures of this administration are due to Donald Trump's inaction as president. And a lot of people on the left, the leftist commentators, will say, Donald Trump's a tyrant, Donald Trump's a dictator. I disagree with that because in the second administration, he's been way less effective than his first time. In the first 100 days, there was injunctions placed by federal judges and courts to the tune of 25. During all of Biden's term, it was 28, the entire 4 years. So Donald Trump has been shot down by the courts, been shot down by the legislative branch. You've seen it with the Save America Act, the SAVE Act. Originally is what it was called, and then it got altered to be thrown into the 2027 NDAA as a compensation package. And so that's why Donald Trump's second term has been an abject failure in terms of checks and balances, whether from the judicial system or the legislative system. So please explain, Adam, how his checks and balances of power haven't failed the administration.
Okay, so let me just wrap up the Iran war point because he's...
Why does Donald Trump bear the responsibility of all of his failures?
Because he's the president and he said that he was going to do a lot of things. So
we have checks and balances of power.
Let me finish. Yes, we do, of course. Donald Trump said that he was going to lower inflation, end inflation on day one and start...
We all know, informed voters, that wasn't going to happen.
He said he was going to start no new wars. He started a new war with Iran, and Congress wasn't able to take the mantle. Therefore, the checks and balance that was supposed to be there was subverted because Trump declared, he basically did a slippery thing and said he was starting a second mission called Project Freedom after Operation Epic Fury. Congress wasn't there to check him, and it was a failure. With inflation, Donald Trump said he was going to end inflation and end the deficit, lower the deficit on day one, even if we remove the day one part. Inflation is higher now. What check caused that? It was Trump's own tariff policy that Congress didn't check. He usurped the power of Congress to place tariffs on other countries and it caused inflation, right?
Well, like I said, with the checks and balance of power with the War Resolution Act, it would have hurt you even more. It would have been a bigger failure if we went in and funded the Iran war in the tune of Congress supporting it with our budgetary allocations.
They didn't support it like that. A lot of Republicans in Congress said they got information that made them very wary of continuing this war. A lot of them said that they were worried about this war turning into forever war. When it comes to tariffs, can you admit that if Congress would have placed a check on the tariffs, inflation would be lower? Like a check and balance there would have made inflation better.
Well, we have to get back to the Iran war first.
Okay, because of that check.
Yeah, well, the checks and balance of power in that is what stopped it from being a bigger abject failure. That's my argument.
No.
Absolutely.
Trump has already failed with all of his objectives in the Iran war, and he's had all of the freedom he wants to do anything. He's had control of the military. Pete Hegseth has been sending the USS Abraham Lincoln.
And what has the Supreme Court been doing?
Regarding Iran?
No, shooting down all of his cases, birthright citizenship.
That's literally just following the Constitution. You said you believed in the Constitution. So when the Supreme Court shoots that down, do you think we should uphold that decision? Or do you think we should, like, what's your prescription here? Should the Supreme Court not exist?
Should Trump believe there should have been a different ruling. They didn't proficiently cite the Constitution as backing for that case. They did it in a horrible manner. They cited the 14th, 15th, 16th Amendment, yet that was made for runaway slaves back in the Civil War. It wasn't made for unchecked balance with illegal immigration at the border.
I disagree with some of the Supreme Court's rulings as well, but I wouldn't go so far as to saying the politicians that I like are failing only because of the Supreme Court. Do I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision on Roe v. Wade? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it was constitutionally backed, the ruling that they made? You said you believe in the Constitution.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. I think that the Supreme Court likely, yeah, it was constitutionally backed. I disagree with the ruling, but from what I've read, it was a fair ruling from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so we have the same opinion like I do on birth.
No, but I'm not saying that Democrats' failures are due to checks and balances. When you say that, it sounds like you kind of want to weaken the checks and balances in order for Trump to pave his way and do his own thing, but that's what he's been doing. He has literally brought in billions of dollars personally to his own wealth fund by starting Trump Coin, by doing insider trading. There's been no checks or balances there. He's failing because of his own doing.
Well, if you're talking about the crypto scam and everything of that sort, let's talk about Joe Biden.
Biden's crypto scam?
Yeah, he had a crypto scam.
Like Biden
Coin? You
know
what it was?
Biden Coin?
No, here's the crypto scam that Biden ran is he failed to enact any legislation on crypto, which made Bitcoin go up to $130,000 price.
Oh, wait, that's the same to you as Trump creating Trump Coin, leveraging the hype of his inauguration to make billions of dollars. Wait, let me finish. Then he started Melania Coin, using the hype of his inauguration to make billions and billions of dollars. Joe Biden not sufficiently passing crypto legislation is a fine, like, if that's your criticism,
yeah,
that's
let
fine.
The top 0.1% get way more trillions in dollars
worth
of funds.
Like President Trump?
Well, he's actually brought us foreign investment. So he's actually given to the rich
into his own,
taken.
Into his own
Joe
pockets?
Joe Biden just gave to the rich.
Wait. Donald Trump has given to the rich and taken from the poor. That's all he's done.
The tax cuts.
For who? Well, for the richest of the rich that were permanent?
Tax on tips, I think, would go to the bottom 50%.
When does that expire? When does that expire again?
2030.
2029, right after the election. So we've got an election that happens.
So 2030.
Well, 2020, it's actually December of 2028, if you look into it. The month after the election, the no tax on tips expires.
And do you know why they did that?
Wait, when do the tax cuts for the rich expire?
No, I want you to know, do you know why they did
that? When do the tax cuts for the rich expire?
Because it's no tax on tips up to $25,000, right, earned throughout the year. They wanted to put a time cap on it so that they could renegotiate with a new Congress because this one has been so ineffective. That was the strategy. That was the play. That's why it expires
in late
2020.
But in that same bill, they were able to make permanent the tax cuts for the rich corporations and people. So they're basically serving the rich. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was extended and made permanent, while also putting a temporary, like floating a temporary $100 bill in front of the faces of working class Americans and saying, this will expire someday, but you should still thank us in the next election.
Do you believe corporations have too much power in America?
Yeah, sure. Some of them.
Okay. So if they hold too much power in America and you start taking some of that power away, who does that hurt in subsequent effect?
If you take away the, I would say probably corporations.
The people that hold the jobs in corporations, which are usually a part of the bottom 50%. So if you start enacting sanctions on these people, they have the power and authority to be petty against the bottom
50%. By sanctions, do you mean taxes?
No, yeah, essentially.
So sanctions is...
And so what I'm saying is the corporate tax rate is where it's at among all these other things negotiated in the one big beautiful bill because the state of our manufacturing and labor economy as well. We've been losing jobs every month, which I'm sure you're going to blame Trump for, not the AI revolution. So once you start enacting sanctions on these corporations and companies, who do you think that they're going to put the other sanctions on for those original ones? So let's say you made the corporate tax rate extremely high. They're going to get mad. Who are they going to lay off? The working class.
I understand that there's downstream effects.
How do we fix that?
Well, it's called the Laffer curve, where I think there is a specific portion of revenue that you're supposed to tax. But can you name me a specific example of Trump failing at something, and that failure wouldn't have happened if he didn't have any checks and balances at all?
Tariffs.
Really?
Tariffs. The tariff.
Wait a minute.
Absolutely.
This is such an example that beats
you. You know why? Because those blanket tariffs were put on the world as a negotiating chip for AI revolution, as well as microchips, stuff like that, that was failed to be negotiated in the CHIPS Act under Biden.
Can I ask you?
He secured more investment for chips and manufacturing in one day in Qatar than Biden did in his whole 4 years while passing the CHIPS Act.
I'll get to that in 1 second, but who has the power to tax American citizens? Congress, right? In, it says that Congress has the power to put taxes on American citizens.
I don't believe tariffs are a direct tax on the American people.
They are, absolutely. The no. Supreme Court disagrees with no. you. The same Supreme Court that you cited for Roe v. Wade.
Well, I disagree with them.
You disagree with them. Okay, so when you...
In fact, this Supreme Court has destroyed this country.
When you artificially raise the prices of goods that are incoming, it necessarily is it's more expensive and it hurts people. So just to use your tariff example... Donald Trump usurped the power of Congress and took it into his own hands to tariff every single country across the globe. It was an abject disaster. There were tariff wars started.
Because it wasn't enacted fully.
No, he on Liberation Day, he got his fullest, wettest dream of tariffs. He got his grand vision of tariffs, and it still failed. Do you think that Trump wasn't able to sufficiently?
He had hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue from it that we had to pay back after the court ruling. What do you mean it was a huge failure? Are you saying on the American people, or are you saying for our government?
It was a massive failure. Manufacturing jobs have gone down.
Let me ask you this question. Yeah. Was it a failure to our government getting hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue, yes or no?
Yes, the tariffs were a failure.
So our government getting hundreds and billions of dollars is an abject failure.
Because it was done illegally, and they had to give the hundreds of billions of dollars back.
Well, it wasn't illegal at the time because the court ruling was subsequent.
When I robbed the bank, I didn't think it was illegal, but then afterwards I found out that the court of law disagreed.
Was there no law in place that said you can't rob a bank? I'm pretty sure the law would already be in
place. And there was a law in place in the Constitution saying that Congress has the power to tax people, not Donald Trump. So
I disagree.
You disagree with the Constitution?
No, I disagree with the assertion that tariffs would fall under that blanket because you're taxing another nation which subsequent raises prices here at home.
It's interesting. Do you remember when Trump just imported, remember when Trump just did his beef imports?
Because I believe the Constitution in that manner was talking about taxation of the people that reside in the nation. No, it's taxing other nations which subsequently raises the price of stuff here domestically.
Which is a tax on Americans. Tariffs are directly a tax.
It's not a direct tax.
It absolutely
is. It's a secondary
pipeline. Let's think about this. So with beef in particular, Trump is now announcing a new plan where he's importing beef at an artificially reduced price.
Yeah.
That makes the beef more competitive and it makes it cheaper for Americans, right? When you do the opposite of that, when you import beef at a higher price, you are putting a tax on the original price of it because you're tariffing it.
But the tariff is a direct tax. There's a different nation involved. That's what makes it different.
Well, no,
does our Constitution have authority on trade negotiations with other nations?
Where is the tariff imposed?
Does it say that in the Constitution?
Where is the tariff imposed, can I ask you? So where is the tariff paid? Is it paid by the other country or by our country?
Well, if you're tariffing the other nation, they pay it to us.
No, when you tariff the goods, we pay it at the border. Customs and Border Patrol then releases it to the companies when they pay the tariff tax. That's just how it works.
Does the tariff revenue go directly to the IRS?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. So then that would make it a different classification of tax, like I'm trying to argue.
No, it's still a tax on the American people. It can still be a tax without it going directly to the IRS. We pay taxes every single day that aren't filed to the Internal Revenue Service. But just to put a bow on this very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I do think that Donald Trump has failed on a lot, and it seems like we agree, but you think that if Trump got his biggest, boldest vision for all of it, it would have been better? I argue that Trump already got his biggest, boldest vision. He went to war with Iran.
He's been neutered in this term.
He did Liberation Day, bro.
Neutered by the legislature.
Liberation Day was literally his wettest dream. What could he have done differently on Liberation Day?
You're talking about one day, but it's a long-lasting effect, which would be tariff negotiations with other countries. And he even said with Liberation Day that he was going to use it as a negotiation tool specifically with Europe to hopefully end the Ukraine and Russia war.
Did you get
so
that?
There you go. Well, it wasn't enacted, so do we know? No.
Well,
if it was actually enacted, I believe he would have the negotiating power to end that war.
So when I look at the Liberation Day tariffs, I see Trump having the ability to do his most deep fundamental desires on tariffs. He put tariffs on every single country. I get that you're saying the tariffs being struck down hurt him, but what do you think he should have done differently on Liberation Day?
Well, on Liberation Day, those tariffs took effect for how many months? Do you remember?
I think it was like
It was around three-ish months, which the infrastructure for those tariffs didn't even really get enacted in those first 3 months because of all the extra office people that they would need to actually enact those tariffs. There was issues of actually where the money would go, of how it would be transferred. So when you say those tariffs directly affected American consumers, how could a policy for 3 months that wasn't fully enacted be a precursor to show what it would have done long term for the country?
That's a very, very good question. And that leads me to the question, isn't this an argument for checks and balances? So if Donald Trump would have done the tariffs, not via executive order and just signing it away, but actually done it as legislation through Congress, the Supreme Court wouldn't have challenged it. We would have actually had long-term incentives for companies to move here, because when you do tariffs via executive order, if the next president has the risk of just undoing it all, then companies aren't going to invest millions of dollars to move over here. But just to wrap up a bow on the tariff part, Trump could have gotten a good tariff policy that surgically targets countries if he did it through Congress, if he went through the proper channels and actually, you know, used the legal system rather than usurping all of the power. Can we agree there that going through Congress would have been better?
No.
Really?
No, I believe
then the Supreme Court wouldn't have shot it down.
The court should have just ruled it. That would have been a valid checks and balance of power would be the court accepting that decision and letting it go through.
Do you just want the court to agree with everything Trump does?
Not everything that Trump does.
Is there something he's done that you are okay with them shooting down thus far?
Ooh, there was a case around, not birthright citizenship, but it was in that time period. I think it was the day after the birthright citizenship ruling. There was one on... I think it was on some type of gun owner classification or something with 2A. And I actually agreed on that because I believe in some limited gun control when it comes to actually bringing in and reeling in our gun problem, but also our mental health crisis. So that was one of the cases. I would have to go back, get you the exact name, but
so yeah. We can move on to the next example. I think that there is some interesting agreement here. We both seem to be looking at Trump's policies and we're saying this wasn't a failure. This
My
didn't turn
biggest
out well.
Question to you, Adam, is wouldn't it be responsible for a president, whether it's Democrat or Republican, to actually enact something with the Supreme Court, since we've seen the elevated use of executive orders, to not allow those executive orders to go into effect until it is ruled by the Supreme Court?
I think that sounds pretty common sense to me. Now, I could see that creating some sort of barriers and lagging effects. Like, say there's an executive order that needs to happen during COVID. Like, this executive order mandates that each state will have this amount of equipment for COVID. You don't want there to be a whole delay in process there. Like, you can imagine scenarios where you don't want there to be. But yeah, there are scenarios where when he signs an executive order, like this did happen with birthright citizenship, I'm pretty sure a court can file some sort of injunction, and that injunction perpetually delays it until it makes it up to the Supreme Court. So I think there is a mechanism like this. But just to like loop back what Trump has failed at thus far, all of these things he's failed at is because he's done it his own way and hasn't really gone through Congress. Like, I think tariffs are a really good example. If he would have gone through Congress, they would still be enacted and there would be long-term tariffs.
That's just not true.
It is.
Congress would totally not enact those tariffs.
Because they think it's a bad idea?
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
Because they were a bad idea.
I don't believe it's a bad idea.
So why
See, that's where I believe Congress and Trump differ is Trump believed it would be a good idea because he's in the room negotiating. Congress isn't.
Enough about tariffs. We can probably move on to the next one. So we talked about Iran.
I have a question for you.
Of course.
Do you call it Lake America or Lake Ontario?
It's still Lake Ontario to me.
No.
Yeah. That's one executive order that needs to be struck down. Do you really think it's okay to like just antagonize our country, our neighboring countries like this? Like, do you not see how Canada would be a good ally?
Well, I don't know why Canada is taking offense to it. The name Ontario was there before Canada was established as a country. So couldn't you just argue he just wanted the name changed?
It's all the context.
Because more of the body of water is under American waters than Canadian waters.
But does it not bother you that Trump is stuck doing this juvenile, symbolic bullshit while inflation is higher, the Iran war rages on, the tariffs are failing, and he's stuck doing Lake of America and the Gulf of America? What's another example in your eyes of Trump needing more power, more executive power?
I would have to say with the White House grounds.
Really?
Well, I actually have more of a problem with the government contracts not going through a bidding process instead of the renovations at the White House, you know, to get down a track of reasoning where you're going. I'm sure you were going to mention the Christie Noem ad spend, the reflecting pool stuff like
that. I actually
that.
Wasn't, but you mentioning it for me is great.
And I'll mention that because I do believe that is a type of corruption that we've seen under Trump, and it's way more valuable and way more viable than what we've seen with the crypto scam and whatever. Because like I said, Biden could have regulated crypto and stopped the 0.1% getting $5+ trillion in new capital that they can spend under a corporation-friendly regime, which is therefore investing back into America again.
So
if you're saying he's such a corrupt dictator king, Biden could have stopped all of this.
So you're saying that if Biden would have passed a crypto bill, maybe Trump wouldn't have started a coin in his own name and raked in billions of dollars.
He probably would have raked in billions of dollars.
He would have found another way.
But he would have not had as much power with the top 0.1%
So it's Biden's fault.
Nation.
It's Biden's fault that Donald Trump is doing self-enrichment via cryptocurrency.
Pivot though. What I'm saying
that,
is
it sounds like
top,
you're saying that.
No. The top 0.1% got way more proportionately richer
like Trump?
Than even Donald Trump himself.
under Biden.
Okay, so
corporations and corporatized billionaires grew way more than under this current term with
if
Trump.
If you're mad,
they've actually lost billions in crypto, billions and billions in crypto.
That's not true.
Because of this administration.
If you're mad,
what's the price of Bitcoin?
Right now, I don't know, like it's probably 75K. How can you be mad at Biden for not placing enough regulations, but you're not mad at Trump for using that to make money? Like, do you not get what I'm saying here? Do you condemn Donald Trump making $5 billion off of Trump coin?
No, I would do it. I would do it. I would launch a crypto coin if I'm president.
Really?
Absolutely. Because it's the consumer's choice if they want to invest in it or not. And it isn't a typical stock. So it's technically their fault for investing in it.
And
it wasn't a rug pull. By the way, it was from 11 different wallets that owned less than 1% of it. So when people say it's a rug pulling crypto scam, I don't believe Donald Trump was an arbitrator of doing anything illegal.
In genuine good faith, I'm going to explain why this really bothers me. When Jimmy Carter took office, he gave away his farm and put it in a blind trust. It has been a precedent for presidents to give away their assets and not use them to make money.
Like Joe Biden gave away state secrets to Burisma while he was vice president so that they could rake in billions of dollars to oil corporations.
It's a cute pivot, but that didn't actually happen. Donald Trump then, as he
Burisma didn't happen, apparently.
Burisma is a real company, but there's no evidence Biden gave them any secrets. But when Donald Trump was taking office, 2 days before he took office, he leveraged the hype of his political career and his inauguration into the White House in order to sell Trump coin. He then gave access to World Liberty Financial to the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. He gave them a bunch of chips, and in return, the UAE put $2 billion into World Liberty Financial. For you to say that because Biden didn't regulate crypto, it's his fault that Trump is being corrupt and everything is just a complete inversal of reality. It's a slippery slope that Trump is at the top of. Trump is carving out the slope right now by making billions of dollars off of Trump coin. Trump is literally the slope himself. Like, he's the one dragging us down this. You have to admit, it's very corrupt to be the president and to sell access to the presidency with a cryptocurrency that's untraceable. That's corrupt, right?
No.
Really?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, interesting. That's an interesting bullet to bite.
Like, here's my question to you, Adam, is Donald Trump has made 27,000 trades in investments, stocks, crypto during the second term through his trust, World Liberty Financial, his sons, everything. I compiled the number together. It was around 27,000 transactions. So if there's conflicts of interest, it's really hard to track because it happened from, I believe, over 500 different companies. So there's not really one necessary conflict of interest that has been pulled out more than
there
the others.
There are a lot.
But under Biden's entire time, when he was vice president and then when he was president, he did 20-something trades, 20-something investments. And all of those investments were very intentional. All of those investments were for large sums of money. That's why he's worth in the low millions of dollars. So could you just concede that maybe Biden didn't necessarily want money during his presidency, but he could also be corrupted by power instead, and he just weighs money at a less level than Trump does?
No. Am I getting this right? You said Biden had made 20 trades, mm-hmm. and Trump, throughout his vice presidency and presidency, which is 12 years, and Trump has made 27,000 trades over the past 1 year. Is that
so
correct?
Why would he?
Are those numbers correct?
Yes, those are
27,000
trades. Since the start of this second
compared
term.
To Biden for 12 years doing 20 trades.
But
I mean, if we look at the raw numbers.
Those 20 certain trades are going to be a conflict of interest
can you name
in
one
the
that
United
was?
States. Well, one of them was allegedly Burisma.
He didn't invest in Burisma.
Well, he invested in some of the oil companies that were involved.
Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma. I can name a bunch of Trump that were a conflict of interest. He has tweeted out the names of ticker symbols like NVIDIA the day after or the day before, oftentimes, he is announcing something about NVIDIA. He tweeted out, go buy Dell right now. And then the next day, he bought a shit ton of Dell. And then a few weeks later, basically, there was a new announcement about the company Dell. He is directly selling access to his Truth Social. It's called Early Access API for 100.
I disagree with that, absolutely. The selling early
but then,
access.
Have you seen that what Donald Trump does on his Truth Social? He'll tweet out, go buy Dell. Which, like, it's if you want to buy a stock personally, that's fine. When you're the president, it becomes a little bit more complicated. When you're the president and you're buying Dell stock, and then the next day you're saying, hey, everyone, go buy Dell. And then the next week you make a big announcement with Dell. That is direct insider trading and selling early access. He's selling access to World Liberty Financial in the presidency, making billions. He's selling access to Truth Social, making billions. This is huge corruption. We need checks on this, if anything.
So do you also believe the Iran war was market manipulation to the oil industry? If like, that's the case, if he's selling early access and he's selling all of this insider info, Could you argue that the Iran war was insider info to give to the oil companies?
Do you mean
as well,
the entire
for people to invest in oil?
Do you mean the entire Iran war, or just specific tweets he makes about
it? Well, I would have to say the action of him starting the Iran war would be enough classification as market manipulation for the oil, OPEC and all of these oil companies, because the price just shot straight through the moon.
No, my genuine take on this is that I think Trump started the war because Netanyahu convinced him that it was going to be a good idea. And then I think off the back of that, they realized they could manipulate the markets with OPEC, even with Lockheed Martin. I'm pretty sure the Lockheed Martin stock has gone up 50% since the beginning of this war. So I can see how insider trading has happened.
I'm trying to get to the root of this argument. Yeah. Most people will just say, oh, Trump shouldn't do that. Well, sorry, we live in the real world.
Trump is you can ask me anything. Yeah.
How could we make it illegal so that he can't market manipulate anymore? And so that actually gets to the root of the problem, is there isn't an effective way. So somebody can unilaterally do all of this and do it legally, right? So how could we actually place limits on what Trump is doing?
I think for the Truth Social Early Access API, the really bothersome part of this is, and how we could fix this, is that when he makes an announcement about the Iran war now, investors get it first before the rest of the world. So they can basically make their moves first if they have early access API. I would totally be okay with a law that stops presidents from insider trading, stops presidents from trading while they're the president. And it shouldn't just be this unspoken norm, like, hey, you should put your farm in a trust. It should be like, if you're the president, you have no conflict of interest whatsoever. And Trump has a bunch of conflicts of interest. Do you disagree with, or do you agree with my prescription there, how we could maybe make insider trading illegal?
You would also have to eliminate those trusts, because after they become president, they can still get state secrets, they get national security briefings, they still are privy to information that people like us wouldn't know.
That's
true.
And
then also with speaker fees and all these other corrupt ways of getting money after they are presidents, I think the only way you could effectively do that is eliminating their ability to have a trust.
Let's loop it back to the topic. Mm-hmm. What other versions of checks and balances would you like to see? Like, we can maybe talk about the midterms for a second.
Yeah.
I think that when it comes to the midterms, Trump is trying to rig them in a few different ways. Do you agree with the Save America Act?
I do. I disagree with how it's being implemented into that that bill for 2027.
Yeah.
I also believe it's going to strip away some of the essential stuff that's in it by the time it gets watered down through the Senate. But I know we're going to talk about the SAVE Act specifically later on. I don't believe he's trying to rig the midterm elections. Do you believe anything inside the SAVE Act is restricting anybody's right to vote?
Absolutely.
How?
Yeah.
Because in the SAVE Act, it literally says for any disability, sick time, travel, any accommodation that you would ever need to not vote or vote in a different capacity is being accommodated in this bill. So how does it restrict it?
Yeah, so there's two different facets of the bill, and they kind of sneak in the second facet, which is way bigger. There's voter ID, which is what you were just talking about. They make it accessible, and I agree with voter ID. I think that if you want to vote in a federal election, you need to be a US citizen and you need to have some sort of ID. Now, we should make ID accessible so no one's like limited from getting it, but voter ID is fine.
Do you seriously believe that it's that hard to get an ID in America?
For some people, like Republicans have made it harder.
I know a girl who actually was a refugee from Afghanistan in 2021. She fled under Biden, she lived in Kabul, went to ASU, literally was transported from Washington to Wisconsin, then given a scholarship, full ride to ASU, and was able to get 3 different state IDs. She was able to get one in Virginia, able to get one in Wisconsin, and get one in Arizona. And she lived the most tireless, helpless life of all time, escaping from Afghanistan. Yet you're saying the people in inner city Chicago don't have access to an ID?
Well, sometimes it's rural people. Well, let me just explain my framework.
Okay.
I'm for voter ID, but there was a case in North Carolina that you can look up. It was a North Carolina voter ID law that was passed. Now, it was only passed after the Republicans in the state requested the voter breakdown by race, by age, not by demographic, just by race. They realized that black voters would take advantage of the early voting. There was 2 weeks of early voting, and that black voters would use student IDs. They realized white voters usually voted on the day of and used hunting licenses and other IDs. So they banned the student IDs that black voters use. They removed 1 week of early voting, and they extended the amount of time you can vote on the day of to help the white voters. The Supreme Court of North Carolina struck this down and said, you guys are targeting voters with surgical precision. This is not me like libbing out or making this up. I promise you this was a case in North Carolina. If you grant all of that, can you see how those extra barriers would hurt people's ability to vote?
I would have to say in that capacity, the reason it was hurting people's chance to vote is they were using hunting licenses and these other alternate forms of ID that I don't see as valid. If it's a federal election, you should only be able to use a federal form of identification.
But the hunting licenses were allowed because white voters predominantly use them, and the state tried to target any ID that black voters use. Like, they were targeting black voters in this state. I'm not saying that, like, black voters are too dumb to get an ID or anything, but there are situations where you can increase the barriers for people to vote. It's just a fact. And when it comes to the SAVE Act, very quickly...
But the access doesn't change.
No, their access... Well, they had access, but they couldn't use that ID. And access is also...
So my argument is, what in the SAVE Act restricts not any access,
because
access is the same, but their ability to vote.
Absolutely. So there's two parts of this.
Because most black people I know have a state ID.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Have a federal ID, a birth certificate.
I am for the voter ID part. But did you also know that the SAVE Act is mainly about documentary proof of citizenship to register at the ballot box?
Yeah, it clarifies the process of it, which is what we've needed.
Well, the document...
Because that situation would have never happened.
So let's run through the documentary proof of citizenship. If you want to go register to vote, basically you need a passport.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many Americans have passports?
Well, you can also do birth certificate.
Let's start off with
passport. Let's start off with real ID.
Let's start off with passport. Yeah. Passport is only held by 56% of Americans. Yeah. It's like a slim majority that disenfranchises a lot of people. But there's more. Mm-hmm. You can use a real ID as long as the real ID shows where you're born in America, mm-hmm. but it only shows that in 5 states. So real ID is available in all 50 states, but only in 5 does it actually say where you were born. Mm-hmm. Then there's birth certificates. Like 90% of Americans have birth certificates, but that's still a huge amount that don't. And I don't even have access to mine. My birth certificate is like 3 hours away at home right now. I can't drive 6 hours. I'm very busy. I'm a busy guy. So some people don't.
Well, yeah, there's illogical barriers that are going to stop people all the time, right? They could go to a printer, put it in a scanner, and that would be enough proof.
Well, not really.
Actually, under the SAVE Act, if it's your original
birth certificate? Yeah, what if it's hours away?
If, like, you have a scan of it, they would be able to read it.
I don't have a scan. I don't even have mine. Mine is, like, literally so far away. But you want to remove the barriers when there's no actual proof.
Oh, there's not a voter center, like, less than half a mile from my house. Then I'm not going to go vote.
What if you live in Alaska, where there's only 7 voter centers in the whole state?
Oh, I agree. In rural areas, there needs to be more access. But we're talking...
Oh, so you understand why access could be important, right?
Well, the SAVE Act has nothing to do with
it. It does. So it
I'm
talking about registering to vote. We're no longer talking about the voting part of it. We're talking about registering. Do you know what percentage of Americans currently register in person at a voting station?
What form of ID is 100% the entire population would have it? There would be none, right? There is no identification that 100% of the population in this country has.
Of course.
But they have 100% access to get that identification.
Not always, no.
Passport, yeah, you buy it. Birth certificate, you can get a replacement if you lose it.
No,
it's not very expensive.
How much does it cost to get a passport?
It's around $100.
It's $150. A lot
for
of
10 years.
A lot of people don't have that money. That is a direct tax. You shouldn't need a
most
passport
Americans,
to vote.
Most Americans, I can confirm, has $150.
You can't confirm that because most Americans don't have $500 for
so
an emergency.
So most Americans don't pay more than $150 in taxes every year?
That's most Americans do not have a surplus $500.
I just need an answer to that question. Most Americans don't pay more than $150 in taxes every year.
No, they do.
Okay. So then that would, in authority, mean they have $150 to give to the government to utilize their rights, which are to own property, to have things in this nation, to have the right to vote. They have to do the process
to
be able to earn it.
There is a difference between setting aside 30% of your money for tax season and keeping that there versus having a surplus $500. Polls show that the average American doesn't have $500 for an emergency. If the average American had a medical emergency or needed a tire changed, most people don't have a spare $500, a surplus $500.
You're saying most people can go to Klarna and get a $500 loan and pay $5 a month.
This
back.
Is what you want people to have to do to vote? They have to get a loan from Klarna?
You haven't given me a solution where it'd be entirely free. How would it be entirely free?
We don't believe
in voter ID, but
yeah,
then it wouldn't be free then.
We're talking about two separate parts. There's the voter registration versus the voter ID. The registration means you need a passport, a birth certificate, or real ID.
I'm just saying there's not an alternative that
there
expands
is.
Access
right
and
now,
expands all of this.
There's no reason. What's the reason for the SAVE Act in your eyes?
To stop illegal immigrants from voting.
How many illegal immigrants have voted since the year 2000?
It's a very low number.
The Heritage Foundation says...
But also to stop mail-in voting. I believe that's...
That's a separate executive order. It's a separate executive order that he's signing. But the Heritage Foundation, which is a think tank for you guys on the right wing, they said that there has been 99 cases of non-citizens voting since the year 2000. Like, a genuine question, really quickly. Mm-hmm. Can you understand where I'm coming from when I see that 99 non-citizens have voted since 2000, that's 4 per year?
I don't see that as a valid stat, because how could you actually articulate that stat when you said earlier only 5 states have on their ID of where they actually live and were
birthed? Oh, because states are always purging the voter rolls, checking the voter rolls. Like, this is a very common...
So how about those 45 states where people don't have to have that address on their identification and are able to get driver's licenses, like I said with that girl earlier? So you're limiting 45 of the states in our union from that study, by the way.
Wait,
do you understand that?
Which one? The Heritage Foundation one?
Yeah.
This is two separate things. This is two entirely
separate
things.
Well, an illegal immigrant can get a state ID and they can use that to vote in 45 states.
You're talking about entirely separate things. Illegal immigrants immigrants cannot vote.
That was only taken from 5 states.
I don't even know. You're connecting two entirely separate things. Real ID, as used and defined by the Save America Act to register, needs citizenship on it. Wait, let me finish. That only exists in 5 separate states. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a nationwide study that was findings from Georgia, from Utah. In Georgia, they audited 20 million voters. Mm-hmm. They found that 6 non-citizens were registered.
I'm trying to get you to see, though, that study did not cover most of the population. What I'm saying is, what percentage of people...
The study has nothing to do with real ID.
What percentage of people do you think use their ID at the voter box?
Wait, the study has nothing to do with real ID. It has nothing to do with...
No, I know. I'm just like, with that
what
study,
percentage
you
of,
have to do simple math.
Wait,
right?
The Heritage Foundation...
What percentage of people do you think use a real ID or a state ID to vote? It's a majority.
Vast majority.
So then, if you're saying 5 states only show proof of citizenship of where they live, in the 45 other states, illegal immigrants can get an ID, can get verification, and go vote, and there would be no way to track it.
I get what you're saying, though.
Right?
There is a way to track it, though.
How?
Because, number one, if you go to vote and you give them your ID, they check it against the voter records that they have to see if you're a citizen. Number two, if you don't have an ID, you have to sign a sworn affidavit saying that you are a citizen under the threat of perjury. So they have a mechanism where they check this out. In Georgia, they audited 20 million voters and found 6 non-citizens voting. In Utah, they audited 5 million voters. They found 1 non-citizen registered.
Why would we take an illegal immigrant's word in a sworn affidavit when they literally broke into the country and ripped apart our sovereignty?
No, we don't have to take their word in the sworn affidavit. We check the affidavit after to see if it makes sense. So let me just back up and have one final point. Can you get what I'm saying? Can you just, for the sake of argument, concede, just for the argument, that non-citizen voting has basically been non-existent for the past decade? There's been like 100 non-citizens voting if you look at most of the stats. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, due to the Heritage stats, I believe that's
true. Okay,
yeah.
And just like... Even like we can just grant that premise.
For sake of argument. Yeah,
we can grant that premise for a second. Mm-hmm. The Save America Act adds administrative burdens that could stop millions of Americans from being able to register to vote in the first place. If we did a balancing test, do you think it's okay to disenfranchise, let's just say 500,000 Americans, to stop 100 non-citizens from voting? Wouldn't this not pass the test, basically?
Would you argue, just for sake of argument, it's in a separate executive order, that limiting mail-in voting would disenfranchise millions and millions and millions of people?
The way that Donald Trump wrote the executive order, yes, it was disenfranchising.
Okay, so then with that premise established, then wouldn't you argue that you just want overall access to voting be as easy as possible? And
for citizens.
For citizens. Okay.
Isn't that fair to say? I want voting to be easy for citizens to do, and I want illegals not to vote. Illegals don't really vote that much.
It already is extremely easy.
So why would we change it?
And there is voter fraud that does take place, correct?
From non-citizens? No, not really.
No, from citizens as well.
Okay, so what would the Save America Act do to stop that from citizens? It's different.
Voter ID to check the voter rolls in all 50 states.
I agree with voter ID. I agree with voter ID. But there's a different mechanism there, too. I think we're looping back around to this.
So how do you implement voter ID but expand access?
To voter?
Yeah.
How about when
I want to hear your opinion.
I think it would be nice that if people turn 18 years old, we immediately send them a free ID as long as they are a citizen and as long as they have some sort of proof that they are a ordinary citizen.
A federal ID? Would it be a federal one?
It could be a federal ID or
it would have to be because
or a state ID.
Yeah, because you'd have to get all 50 states on board if it was a state ID.
Whatever way we could do it, I would like IDs. You get what I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. If we put voter ID in and then we made ID harder to get, like you need $600 to get an ID, that restricts voters because it's a poll tax.
So if the SAVE Act, all it did is establish a free ID to give out to every American citizen, you'd be in support of the SAVE Act.
No, because there's two separate portions of it. There's the voter ID part, so that's election day. There's another
portion. But you'd be in agreement with the rest of the voter ID.
Sure, the voter ID thing is fine. I've said that that's fine. Mm-hmm. But there's another thing called documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote, and that is hugely, hugely hard for Americans to do.
That's not a limiting factor. That is not a valid limiting factor.
It is.
You don't have a state ID or a passport or a birth certificate as a citizen. How other way could you prove that you're a citizen of the United States? That would be easier.
Well, like Virginia, for example, when you go to register.
You just want the government system to have that inherent knowledge already and then
they do.
Scapegoat your personal capacity.
A lot of times the burden should fall on the government, not the citizen, to prove this. But right now there are mechanisms to check.
You know what that is. That's two-step verification. That's the only way that you could have a secure vote.
So wait, can we concede that right now non-citizen voting isn't really happening at a broad scale?
I don't believe it's happening at a scale that most conservatives inflate it to be.
I actually really appreciate that. I think that my side can like inflates things too, but this is something that is very inflated.
I think just as a critique to your side, it's a little off topic. I think they do that a lot with ICE, which was established by Bill Clinton in the Alex Preddy case and the Renee Good case. They're like, defund ICE completely after one or two situations where ICE federal agents had to get involved with citizens because of lack of local police force. And so just as a critique to your side, ICE, they absolutely do it.
ICE has fundamentally changed since Bill Clinton created it, right? ICE has fundamentally become a different force. Bill Clinton's ICE.
It was useless when it was so
Bill Clinton's ICE didn't have masks on their face. Bill Clinton's ICE wasn't murdering U.S. citizens in the street. They didn't have basically total
masks
immunity.
Masks on your face is a problem?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, right now they're not being held accountable for any of the murders they're committing.
She didn't wear a mask during COVID?
No, I did, but we're talking about two separate things. That's not a good gotcha, right? Masks well, during COVID.
Subverting identity, yeah. I don't trust any other citizen more than a federal agent, so I would hope you'd have that same premise.
Masks during COVID to prevent the spread of a disease is far different than ICE agents killing people than having a mask on so they don't have any accountability.
Well, how about criminals that wore masks during COVID to commit their crimes?
Oh, that's terrible. You shouldn't commit crimes or wear masks. Yeah, of course. I wouldn't be okay with that.
Yeah, so then we should just get rid of the masks, not the criminals, right?
Well, I don't know what you're saying.
No, you'd want to get rid of the criminals.
The ICE agents.
And you're using the masks as ICE agents,
I'm saying
wearing them as a precursor of why they shouldn't do what
no,
they
I'm
do.
No, I'm saying ICE agents are criminals when they have the masks on.
Okay, let's further arguments.
Wait, can I flesh that out? Mm-hmm. When Renee Nicole Good was murdered in Minnesota.
You know her middle name well.
Oh, it was all over the news. When Renee Nicole Good was murdered.
Barack Hussein Obama.
That's a good one, he's right over there. When Renee Good was murdered in Minnesota, did an investigation happen into that, or did the federal government shoot down the investigation?
They shot down the investigation.
Do you think an investigation should have happened, at least just to go through due process?
So do you remember what happened? It was subverted to local law enforcement to deal with it.
No, the DOJ refused to coordinate with the local law enforcement when they were investigating Alex Preddy and Renee Good.
The investigation that happened. You know why? Because there was a federal warrant that was served in that area, and that was outside of the jurisdiction.
There was not an investigation. But when the officers had their masks on their face, and they were being protected by the administration.
The Minneapolis Police Department couldn't have launched an investigation?
They tried to, but all of the evidence was being hogged and stolen by the federal government. They were refusing to coordinate.
There was an active warrant. Yeah, there was an active warrant
okay,
for that
so
area.
Okay, so let's just think about this. ICE agents are allowed to cover their identity mm-hmm. with masks, conceal their identity. Yeah. When they do fuck up and kill somebody, we're going to stop any investigation into them because of some ominous reason.
Well, between Bill Clinton and now, there weren't phone cameras with everybody that could film their identity, and then there weren't flock cameras around that could confirm where their license plate is, and there weren't ways to dox people that could make it easy to go kill them.
You realize your entire topic...
Or their family.
Your entire topic is about checks and balances and wanting to remove them. And when you're talking about ICE and wanting to remove any checks and balances on them, that creates authoritarianism. Do you want ICE to have no accountability, or do you think it's okay for them to be held accountable?
Okay, so a check and balance in this case would be them removing their mask and opening up their identity for accountability, which would be them getting killed in our modern day and age.
I mean, no one should get killed. I mean, who would kill them? No one should get killed.
Well, it's kind of arrogant and ignorant for you to say that. One day, if we just make the policy where they can't wear masks anymore, which, by the way, a Democrat administration will never do that because they know the ramifications. They're going to be responsible for multiple ICE agents dying at the hands of people that are mentally deranged.
Okay, ICE agents can keep the masks, whatever, but can you
admit— What if they don't want to get COVID? Let's just say for
sake of
argument,
okay? That's fine, that's fine, okay.
We're dealing with crowds of
people.
But
can you admit that if a masked ICE agent commits a murder or kills somebody on the job, whether it was justified or not, there should be an investigation and oversight into that? Can we just end off by agreeing there should be investigations when law enforcement kills people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so when I look at Renee Good and Alex Pretty, there was a lack of investigation. There was a lack of accountability.
Because of an ongoing process.
I'm not sure that that's
true. I believe that there will be a full investigation.
Well, it was 6 months ago.
Yeah, investigations are usually a long
time. Well, the evidence that was collected by the government is now slowly fading away. But either way, Carson Carpenter, thank you so much for joining
me.
That was a great conversation.
Thank you, brother.
You know, Mockler Media is rapidly growing, and we need your help. If you want to see more debates, make sure you drop a like below, subscribe to the feed, and contact team@mocklermedia.com if you know anyone that would be good on this show. Thank you all. Are you really defending this? Do you think he has control of this?
Do you want me to explain
this? Do you think he has control of
this? He's interrupting because he's not in control himself currently of the conversation.
What are you talking about, bro? It's so funny to me that I watched your Jubilee and you were so confident debating Dean and Parker that there was going to be a deal that Trump signed soon. Now that I have you sitting across from me, you're running away.
Hold on.
3 hours
on,
3 hours back? That is very privileged,
man. Let me finish.
We are 180 days into this war that was supposed to be 4 to 6 weeks. The nuclear material is still sitting in Iran, and you're going to sit here and say, oh, it's under the rubble. It is still in Iran. They still have the blueprints. They can rebuild it again just like they did before.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.